Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and welcome. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius. I'm Carl Nordgren. I hope you're having a wonderful Sunday and that you're going to have just an awesome, awesome week. Exploring Your Creative Genius, to remind you folks, is the show that believes that creativity is so important that I do you a favor by not defining it for you, but rather giving you lots of perspectives, lots of prompts, lots of ideas so that you can construct your own understanding of what it means to be creative. One of the ways I accomplish that is by bringing guests onto the show. And we've got a fantastic guest today, folks. I've been looking forward to having this guest ever since I first met him. You're going to meet Dr. H. Kenneth Fisher. Ken was a Rhodes Scholar. He taught and practiced as a professor of medicine at UCLA and Cedars-Sinai Medical Centers. He's a board-certified specialist in three different fields: in internal medicine, in pulmonary medicine, and in sleep medicine. What we're going to talk about today is his most recent book, which is titled Sleep, A User's Guide. And folks, as we sit here right now on this beautiful Sunday, it's the number one book. His book is the number one book in the sleep medicine category on Amazon. Thanks, Ken, for joining us. I sure appreciate you being here with us today. Is there anything you'd like to add to that introduction?
I just want to say thank you, Carl, for the invitation. And secondly, for the gracious introduction.
Well, there's so much more we could say about you, but I want to hear your voice. The guests or the listeners want to hear your voice. So let's start with a question that is right at the heart of your work, right at the heart of my work, right where our work overlaps. What does sleep have to do with creativity?
Well, that's a great question, especially for your audience. And to get to the answer, I'm going to jump in with three examples that show the link between creativity or originality and sleep. Let's think back to 1864, where the great Russian chemist Dmitri Mendeleev has been struggling for 10 years to understand how the different chemical elements, carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, sulfur, relate to each other, and he's been totally unsuccessful. On this night, however, he wakes up with an aha moment. He goes to his desk, sits down, and writes out an organizational chart showing the relationships between the various chemical elements. Now, around the world, students of chemistry everywhere would be able to repeat that table themselves, which they now call Mendeleev's periodic table of the chemical elements.
And it came to him in a dream.
Came to him in a dream.
Awesome.
A second example. It happened just 1 year later in Germany this time. Another chemist named Friedrich Kekulé had also been struggling for many years trying to understand why this 6-carbon molecule that he was working with didn't seem to have the properties that he expected. And he just couldn't figure it out until he also awoke from a dream with an aha. And he also began at that moment to plan a series of experiments, which ended up confirming his dream's idea. And he thus told the world about the first ever known cyclic compound. The reason the 6 carbons didn't act like the chain he anticipated was they weren't a chain, they were a ring.
Cool.
And that chemical is benzene, one of the most important chemicals used in industrial chemistry throughout the world.
And have I heard the phrase, the benzene ring? Is that a phrase I would have heard before? Oh, very cool.
That's
very
exactly
cool.
Right.
Another dream. Wonderful.
Let's come forward 100 years, 1964, and some fellow named Paul McCartney, whom you may have heard of as part of the Beatles, awoke one night with a dream in his head. The dream was about a melody, which was new to him. He went to his piano, getting out of bed, and played out what we now recognize all over the world as the song Yesterday.
Very
cool.
So
how could these events happen? In order to understand them and understand why sleep has something to do with creativity, we're going to need to consider the organization of human sleep.
Well, before we do that, let's hold just a real quick second, and then let's get into that organization of a night's sleep. And one thing I find in common with all three of these breakthroughs is that they weren't outside, you know, they weren't outside their domain of speciality, right? They're really focusing in this space. And then they get into their subconscious dream mind, and then they have these ideas. It's not like they had an idea about a song, but they were a chemist, right? These breakthrough creative ideas came in the field that they had really committed themselves to.
That's right.
Very cool. So yes, let's talk about how a night's sleep is organized. If you could tell us about that, that sounds like a really interesting topic.
Okay, so the basic concept is that the sleep has roughly 90-minute segments. They don't have to be exactly that, but throughout the night, we cycle through these segments, and each segment has its own organization. It doesn't have to be exactly right each time, but the general concept is we go from being awake to being drowsy, and we'll hope that none of our audience is there at this moment. Drowsiness occurs for about 5% of a night's sleep. That's stage one. In stage two, we are really asleep. We can no longer hear sounds. We can no longer appreciate lights. We can no longer have kind of reverie type thinking. We are really asleep. That occupies about half of our night. Stage three sleep is in some ways even deeper. When we awake someone from stage three and ask what they were dreaming about or thinking about, they're not able to give us any answer at all. We don't know whether that means they weren't thinking or weren't dreaming or just couldn't recall, but that's the fact. That's the case. That occupies maybe a quarter of the night. And finally, there's what's called stage REM, standing for rapid eye movement sleep. And during that period, or those periods that recur during the night, our memory is being consolidated. So the events during the day, of which we remember gazillions, are sorted out into those that are important versus those that can be thrown away and not remembered. The important ones have to be laid down into the memory structures of the brain. Emotions are processed during REM period also. Metabolic activity of the brain is greater than it is even when we're awake. So REM is a pretty active period.
Wow.
And finally, dreaming occurs during about half of all of our REM.
Interesting. Well, we're going to have a break here coming up in just a second. Ken and folks, when we come on back, Ken is going to revisit where we've been right here talking about REM sleep and dreams, and then we've got some other great topics to discuss, so come on back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
And welcome back, folks. Thanks for coming back. Appreciate you listening. In the first segment of the show, we introduced you to Dr. H. Kenneth Fisher. I'm calling him Ken, and Ken is a sleep specialist, the number one best-selling author in the category, according to Amazon.com. And at the break, Ken was talking about REM sleep and what's going on in the brain when we are dreaming. Ken, please pick that up for us.
Okay, so the important question now is, how does the brain function? What the heck's going on in there? We know it's a very complicated structure. The main task of the brain is, for our purposes today, to move information from one place to another. And it does that using very tiny electrical signals. They're of the order of a microvolt in strength. And the signals pass from one cell to another within the brain. The passage and frequency of those signals is modulated by a bunch of different hormones, And the hormones can be norepinephrine or acetylcholine, and there are a number of others that have function in a similar way. When a committee of neurons decides to act together for a common purpose, we call that committee a circuit. So it's a circuit of brain cells. They're not distinguished in their degree of connection to other cells. They don't look any different, but they function together over and over again for whatever task it is that they're accomplishing. Okay, so now we know about cells, we know about the organization of sleep. What about dreams? Dreams are perceptions. They're perceptions that are brought into our awareness by the activation of brain circuits. Some of the dreams are very realistic. They relate clearly to what was happening today, whether we accomplished a home run, or in my case, a good tennis serve, or whether someone we thought affronted us. Those are going to be processed during realistic dreams. Those dreams are typically black and white, and they're typically non-REM. They don't occur during REM, the stage of REM. But some dreams are wildly unrealistic. They may have us flying on a carpet over our city, looking down at it. They may have the people we're talking to change within a second to someone from a totally different country. They may involve our emotions, in particular that. And yet, no matter how strange the dreams are, our brain seems not to take the least bit of notice that they're really impossible. For us, it's all real. We have no skepticism. This kind of dream is often in multicolors.
Wow.
Neurologists recognizing the wild nature of the dreams and the absence of any skepticism in our brain often term that period of dreaming as a period of temporary psychosis. But of course, we do wake and get out of the psychotic state as soon as we wake up. Those dreams are REM dreams.
Well, you know, I had never heard what this is brand new for me to learn that the more realistic one's dream is, the more likely it is to be black and white. The more fantastic your dream is, the more likely it's going to be in color. I did not know that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that work comes from Harvard.
Is that fairly recent insight, or have we known that for a while?
No, I think it was quite a few years ago. I'm blocking the man's name for the moment, but he wrote a book about dreams in which he presented a bunch of actual studies of dreams where individuals were awakened during their dreaming, asked to report what they had been doing with their dream, and that's how he gradually accumulated this information.
Wow, that's very interesting. I'm sorry to say this about myself, since I want to be seen as such a creative, imaginative person, but most of my dreams are in black and white.
I suspect most people's are.
Yeah.
I should tell you one other important thing about REM dreams, and maybe we'll put it in when we resume. But REM dreams, if the person doesn't awaken within if the dream is not laid down in the brain within 90 seconds, it is permanently lost. So if a dream is interrupted by someone being awakened during the dream, they will never remember that dream.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's an interesting side fact.
Yes, 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 it is. Yes, it is. So we what I've also heard about dreams, Ken, is that that we memorize in our dreams. I don't know if I'm saying this quite rightly, but some new information that we learn that day, frequently our dream will help us learn that better while we're sleeping?
Absolutely right. That process is called consolidation.
Okay.
And in that function of the brain has to decide which of the thousands and thousands of things that we remember from the day just passed, which of those is worth remembering and storing away in the storage cabinets, the hard drives, if you will, versus which ones are totally unimportant and can be thrown away? You know, the color of the orange that I peeled this morning, it's unlikely I'm ever going to need that. So that likely would not be laid into permanent memory. But on the other hand, the headline that I read in this morning's newspaper might very well be crucial for me in the next months or even the next days. So that kind of information is likely to be stored more or less permanently.
Very cool. So your brain is making those sorts of judgments as to, you know, sort of prioritizing the significance of the data that it is taken in during the day.
Yes. And sleep scientists have discovered that they can associate certain patterns of wave function in the brain with certain parts of that consolidation, and different kinds of information are consolidated differently during different stages of sleep. Some of the stages of sleep require that they occur within a number of hours after the experience for excellent memory. Others have to have sleep before that event in order to remember them well. So it's very complicated. I don't pretend to understand all of it, but it is complex. And no surprise, the brain has something like 300 billion neurons.
Right. Yeah, so that casual statement that we'll sometimes make, we'll say, well, I'll sleep on it. There's nothing casual about that. That can perhaps be a real significant event.
Absolutely not.
Well, folks, we've got one more segment coming up, and Ken's going to talk about how do you make it more likely in your life that you can experience your dreams in a creative fashion. I'll set Ken back up for that when we come on back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back, folks. Thanks for coming back. I'm so happy to be able to share Dr. Kenneth Fisher with you today and his work in the area of sleep. And he's been focusing on dreams and how dreams can be part of our creative life. And so let's get right to that point. Ken, how do I maximize? How do our listeners maximize their chances of having a creative dream life?
Thanks, Carl. I'll resume with a little expansion on REM sleep, which we were talking about.
Yes.
The important thing about REM sleep is that in that time, there is simultaneously not only the actions on current dreams, the brain consolidates new information and handles new information of the day, but also the brain loosens up the ability to connect with much older dreams. So the guy who's trying to solve a problem for today, which is bustling around in his head, can now gain access to memories that he had 20 years
cool.
ago. And if those can play into his current problem, he will be able to apply the two together at the same time. So the brain in REM joins current information with older links. It can thus recognize patterns that it never recognized before. It can thus have new insights into the information that it really already had. And it can develop new truths. So that's the aha moment.
Awesome.
Creativity.
Awesome. So how do I get that? Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So the $64 question is, how can anyone maximize his opportunities for having that kind of creativity occur during his sleep? So basically, the idea is we want to be very careful and preserve our REM sleep. How do we do that? The first concept and importance is get enough sleep. Each person's a little bit different in how much that is. But people who try to skimp and get several hours less per night than they really know they should have to be best, they're making a mistake, because the brain does not work as well under those circumstances. And the chances are what's going to be lost is REM. So not only do we want to have enough hours for sleep, more or less continually, it's very important, it turns out, that the timing of the sleep is the same. And this has been demonstrated within the last year or two in teenage girls in somewhere in the Middle East. Those who did not have regular sleep times needed more naps during the day than their age peers who had more regular sleep. So because REM is much more common during the last part of the night than it is during the earlier parts of the night, it's important to protect the sleep in the later hours of each night. We don't want to have roosters crowing right next to our head when it's when we got 2 hours left to wake up before we have to wake up. This is now a special bulletin for students of any age, but especially young students. Your ability to learn is precious, and it doesn't stay the same throughout your life. It decreases with age, so don't waste your chances while you're young. From age 30, our stage 3 sleep, delta sleep or slow wave sleep, that gradually diminishes so that by age 70, most of us have very little, if any, of it left. That's really important because that stage helps us store new memories. The result of that is that older people, like maybe me, have the ability to memorize overnight that's only half as good as people who are typically in the age of students, 15 to say 25 or 30.
Yes, yes.
So it's very smart to do your best while you're youthful to make sure you get enough sleep for you, that you sleep regular hours whenever possible. Exercise is also very helpful for many functions of the brain, including memory. Avoid the all-nighters because they basically destroy the following day. You will learn almost nothing the following day. And there are two important recreational substances, and Carl, I thank you for alerting me to one of these. There are two important recreational substances that decrease REM. One is alcohol.
Okay.
And the other one is cannabis.
Okay.
Especially the THC form of cannabis, tetrahydrocannabinol. So these two will decrease your REM no matter what else you're doing. So therefore, it's a good idea to go easy on both of those.
On both of those. And in the minute that we've got left, Ken, what more do you want to share with us on this?
Sleep is such a normal function. There's no need to stress about it, but do set up your life so it comes at the same time, close as you can manage, day after day after day. And don't pretend that you're going to get away with five-hour nights over and over again.
Right.
Yes, you can do it, but you will not learn as much. You will not have the memories that you otherwise would have.
Very good. Oh, very good. Well, I sure appreciate this, Ken. And to remind the listeners, Ken's show will be posted on the Chapelboro website and on Wednesday. And in the little column that I will write up about this episode for Ken, there'll be contact information, there'll be links to his books, there'll be information there that you can follow up on. Ken, thank you so very, very much for being our guest today. I sure appreciate it.
Carl, I had a wonderful time sharing it with you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And folks, thanks for listening, and I hope you all have a wonderful week.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.